It's a trap!
Hello, and welcome to episode number 45 of Radio TCX.
Your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
This week, we sat down with Kevin Lines, the runner-up at the 2016 X-Wing World Championship.
If you listen back to some of our first episodes where we talk about the 2016 store championships, Kevin Lines' name pops up quite a bit there, where he really made a name for himself flying the Corin Miranda list. Then he was able to top 8 the Mountain View Regional in California, and then go all the way to the final table at this year's World's Championship.
Quite an impressive accomplishment. Kevin is an excellent player. We played with him several times before, and he definitely earned that spot at the top table. It was really awesome to sit down and do this interview with him. Probably one of my favorite interviews we've done so far.
Yeah, playing with Kevin and then now talking with him, it's clear that he's definitely got a mastery on this game. Definitely a lot of knowledge that he was able to share with us, which was exciting.
So here's our interview with Kevin Lines. All right, so Carson and I have Kevin Lines on the line. Kevin was the runner-up at Worlds, made it to the final table, and unfortunately lost to the now world champion, Nan Torfs. But Kevin is an excellent player, and we're really excited to have him on the show today. Thank you for joining us, Kevin.
Hey, guys. It's good to be here, finally. I'm surprised you didn't confuse me with Jamie.
All right. Well, the real reason it took us so long to have you on the show is I couldn't figure out how to get people recorded remotely.
It's all right.
So,
yeah, this is much overdue by no fault to Kevin. It's basically just Tim and I's fault. Our schedules have been pretty busy.
But we are very thankful for you to be on the show. So let's get into it.
All right. So let's just start off, Kevin. When did you start playing X-Wing?
I started about 3 years ago. Not quite. Technically it was 3 years ago. I've been to 3 Worlds now. So yes, 3 years ago.
Do you remember what wave had just come out or was about to come out?
It was before wave 4. I started in May, before we had the June regionals in the cities at FFG. Okay. And that was when I first started. So the first tournament I ever went to was our Twin Cities regional.
Yeah, so I think I joined about the same time. That must have been a tough crowd, though a very different crowd now. The Twin Cities community has shifted quite a bit in the past couple of years.
Yep, it was a lot of swarms. But it was also, that's when Aaron Bonner invented the C-3PO Fat Chewy shenanigans.
Which I would argue is kind of joining at maybe one of the lowest points in X-Wing.
Well, Wave 3 was kind of a high point. It was then Wave 4 was when there was the turn.
Right, yeah. Well, I'm talking about, yeah, when it was all just TIE Phantoms and Fat Hans out there, and you could not fly your 2B-Wing, 2X-Wing list that I really wanted to fly.
Although, you'll appreciate what I did fly at the time.
Which was?
I was flying Biggs with shield upgrade, R5P9, Garvin with R2-D2, Abtizum with push the limit, engine upgrade, and advanced sensors.
Okay, you got a B-Wing in the mix there.
Rebel regen before it was a thing, but Abtizum was awesome.
Did you feel like his stress reroll was that valuable?
Yes. But it was also mainly on durability, end game. But what was so cool is with advanced sensors, push, and engine, she's kind of like a Soontir who's crazy. And when you need to, you just push early and you do a white maneuver so that you still got it. But it was really effective. I mean, her job was to kill TIE swarms, and she did it really well.
That was when you could arc dodge at pilot skill 6.
Yep. Yep.
Another one of the dominating forces at the time. So were you kind of set on the competitive game right away? You were sold into it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it took me a while to get into the competitive game, but after my first tournament, hooked, no looking back. So what is it about the X-Wing game that drew you in, mechanically, aesthetically?
It's a combination, I think. Part of it was the mechanics. It felt really good. Part of it was that it's Star Wars and it's toy spaceships. And the other part was just, it felt really good. There was so much tactical design space. There was so much room. Because when I came in at wave 3, you could legitimately run anything and be pretty effective. I mean, swarms were still the number one, but you still had a lot of room for creativity. And It the game really felt good. Like, I played a lot of Magic the Gathering, not really competitively, but kind of competitively. And I played one game of X-Wing and I just immediately stopped playing Magic.
Well, yeah, part of the beauty of X-Wing is that the like core mechanics are so simple. You just like set your dial, you move, you take an action. But then like the sophistication and list building and all the options you have like beyond that make it really intriguing to like assemble these lists and try them out. Especially at the time, I'd agree, Wave 3 seemed like a good entry point. Until the dreaded Whisper started showing up.
It was all about how do you get those advanced proton torpedoes off, right?
Right.
So not just looking at stuff you've flown competitively, but like what is your favorite ship, I guess, at any point to fly? You know, like what would you like to see on the board if you can't fly it right now? Or even if it's one you're flying right now, what's your favorite ship?
So it started with the A-Wing. I love the A-Wing from all the Rogue Squadron games and just in general. The A-Wing's a great ship. But in X-Wing itself, I have to say Corran Horn because he's just so good. But I really have started to love Miranda, possibly at the same level that I like Corran.
What's kind of like pulling you away from Corran and moving towards Miranda?
Just the versatility. Miranda's so versatile and she's so capable of doing almost everything you need her to do. And when you fly, like someone that flies a K-Wing really well can do horrible things to people. And it's really satisfying. I think that's the biggest part is if you fly a K-Wing really well, it's one of the more satisfying, rewarding ships to fly.
Yeah, but you can mess it up so easily too.
You absolutely can. But you same thing with Corran. You know, if you fly Corran really well, he's just a rock star. But if you make one mistake, he dies.
Yes.
Well, and obviously you've had pretty good success with both Corran and Miranda. But before we get too far into our world's talk, we have this question we ask every guest on the show. If you had to describe your X-Wing playstyle using the name of an elite pilot talent upgrade card, what card would you choose and why would you choose that card?
So I thought about this for a little bit and I think I would have to go with adaptability.
Double-sided card.
Yeah. And I think my world's list shows why. Like, that list is the definition of how I like to fly.
Well, and like you were saying with Miranda, you just have so many options that you can just react situationally to whatever your opponents bring to the table.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's very much a toolbox list with things to take on just about any force.
And I feel like that's been kind of missing in X-Wing for a while. Those kind of, because that's what I always like to fly. I was flying the 3Z95s and Poe and a Stresshog for a long time. And I love that list because there's so much you can do with it. You've got huge blocking potential with 3Zs. You've got the Stresshog there dealing out stress. And then late game, you can kind of use Poe as an ace. So you've got a lot of different options there. I didn't see that as the metagame kind of developed after that. You couldn't really get these versatile lists. You kind of just did the same thing. Your Dangaroo always has kind of the same general strategy.
Yep. Well, it's a lot of it's because control kind of went away. And in a sense, my list is kind of a control list. But yeah, I think control is a big part that kind of is missing in the game, especially Ion. I mean, before Worlds, nobody was running Ion. And I think Ion is so good.
Well, and tractor beams were kind of, until the Shadowcaster came out, tractor beams were kind of dead on arrival. They were just not worth the effort of sacrificing damage for the sake of one pretty powerful control effect. But
yep.
And stress is now just like situationally good. Yes, it can shut down some lists, but other lists, they're already doing that to themselves and don't care.
Yes, stress control is pretty much dead right now. And I don't know that it's going to come back anytime soon now that the defenders are so strong.
Right. But Ion works on basically everybody, including large ships. It's actually arguably better on large ships, too.
Yep.
Before we get too far into like a Worlds discussion and what happened at that event, could you just tell our listeners what your list was that you ran at the 2016 Worlds?
Sure. I ran Corran Horn with Push the Limit, Fire Control Systems, Engine Upgrade, and R2-D2. Miranda Donnie with Twin Laser Turret, Advanced Slam. Sabine ran Extra Munitions, Homing Missiles, Connor Net, and Ion Bombs.
Okay, so let's, a lot to unpackage there. Let's start with the easier one of Corran. 48 is kind of the standard with Push the Limit, Fire Control System. How do you feel about Advanced Sensors Corran compared to Fire Control Systems Corran?
So I used to run Advanced Sensors Corran with two A-Wings, and I think the best way to describe it is he'll never die, but he doesn't deal damage. And when it comes to a tournament setting, that 75-minute clock is very, very, very significant. So to me, yes, you can run in Advanced Sensors and it's great, but you just don't have the damage output, especially in the current game where everyone is so defensive. You need the offensive level.
Absolutely. And with Korin's ability to shoot a second time, what's the point if you don't have the modification for it, really?
Exactly. His double tap basically was, I hope I get lucky.
So we've started to see a lot of twin laser turrets reappear thanks to the overabundance of TIE defenders out there. Do you feel like Korin's particularly at risk because of this new wave of twin laser turrets?
So actually, no, because I ran Korin last year with Dash at Worlds, and I'm not afraid of TLT. With Korin, statistically, you should be able to handle 2, maybe 3 TLTs by yourself. If you position yourself correctly with regen and evade token and focus, I mean, even if you've got, let's say you have 2 TLTs shooting at you, you're maybe going to take 2 damage, probably less.
Yeah, unless they're aggro mechs, but you're not really seeing many of those right now.
Right, and if that's the case, then your wingmate's job is to kill at least one of them before Korin enters the fight. And once he does, then you're okay.
Well, and you have a pretty nice distraction in the form of Miranda Dani, who has her own twin laser turret. That is a really expensive small base ship coming in at 52 points. I cannot even fathom running a ship that expensive that's a small base ship.
Yeah. When you were list building, how did you come to the conclusion that you wanted that expensive a Miranda instead of a third ship?
So for a really long time, I ran Korin, Jake, and a Proto, and I love that list. And then I eventually was like, okay, I'm going to try out Dash. So I ran Dash without title to a lot of success. And I pretty much was like, okay, I need 52 points. 52 points is like how I build lists. I say, all right, if I'm going to play Rebels, I have 52 points to work with. Let's see what I can do. And I found that you need certain attributes. And then I kind of looked through the list. So from running EAA, which is E-Wing and 2 A-Wings, I learned I need to be able to hit and run. I need to be able to be quick and get in and do damage and run away. And I need to be able to engage and disengage quickly. So I sat and went through all the Rebel ships, and I'm like, okay, what works, what works? And eventually I got off of Dash, and I found out, I played the K-Wing after Worlds, and realized, like, this ship is so powerful. So then you start kind of tooling her out, and you're like, okay, what do I need to answer aces that move after me? What do I need to answer this, and what do I need to answer that? And eventually that's what I arrived on.
Right. I mean, the K-Wing is not quite a glass cannon, because it has 9 hit points, but when you put 52 points into it, it does kind of feel like a glass cannon for the survivability to your investment ratio there.
Oh yeah, it can die fast.
So she needs to pack quite a punch, I think, to make up for that.
Yep.
But don't you think the risk of having a Korin left on the field makes your opponent tend to want to target Korin and not focus down Miranda?
Absolutely. It's a horrible decision for you to have to make. Who are you going to try to kill first? And I emphasize, who are you going to try to kill first? Because both of them can run and regenerate. You have to commit. And if you commit to the wrong one, or if I slip out of the net, then you're going to lose the game eventually.
So you've been flying versions of this list for quite some time. I started seeing these, you know, last year when you started practicing with them. Could you just give us some of the permutations that you've gone through as new
Sure.
upgrade cards have come out?
Yeah. So at Store Champs is when I started the list. And that was like February for FFG. That was the first time I ran the list. It originally had seismics, or no, I originally didn't have any actionless bombs. And I had recon spec because Sabine wasn't out at the time. And that was, I mean, that literally was right when I started flying the K-Wing. So I hadn't really messed that much with it. And then I tried out Chewbacca crew instead. I tried out Bombardier, which was really cool.
Yeah, that was the first time we played, was when you used Bombardier.
Yeah, Bombardier. And that was the first time I used actionless and action bombs. And I realized I will never not play Miranda without both types of bombs because it's so effective.
Well, it just adds to that toolbox, you know, mentality there, that you can do both an action bomb or you could do a movement bomb. It leaves your opponent guessing, especially if they're at a matched pilot skill.
Exactly.
During the store championship season, when we first played, that might have been one of the X-Wing games I've learned the most from. The 100-0 table where my robots were pointed the wrong direction the whole game. I realized there was a lot more intricacies to the maneuver phase that I was just hadn't grasped before, which with a K-Wing, you can really exemplify your grasp of all the intricacies of the movement phase. It's a ship that really, I think, lets you show that off.
Yep. If you can run a K-Wing really well, you can really impress people. And then eventually, once Wave 8 came out, I had to abandon the list because of U-boats. So I went to Chopper for a while. And that was really good. But then I came back to Miranda because I, you know, U-Boats got nerfed before Worlds, and I'm like, okay, I can fly Miranda again. And I started playing around with, okay, what do I want to do? We have to have Sabine because she's just money. And then I was playing around with seismic charges, and I'm like, you know, they're cool. I tried long-range scanners, and I was unimpressed. I went back to Advanced Slam. And then I sat and thought about it, and I was like, okay, what can I use to help fill the hole of people that either charge Miranda or get into a bad spot? Because I notice I often am fighting people in the corner. And then I thought, you know what? I've never used ion bombs in my life. Let's try it. And I used it once, and immediately I was sold on ion bombs.
What do you think makes ion bombs so strong in the metagame right now?
There's so many big base ships right now. So many palp shuttles and defenders. Those are the three big things. I mean, I guess those are two, because the palp shuttle is a big base ship. But so I would say there's so many ships that Ion is so effective against, and people haven't seen it for so long that when it comes back, they're like, oh wait, I just won forward, and it's really, really effective.
Right, and if you can catch like a large base ship twice, sometimes there's nothing they can do about walking off the board.
Yeah,
there.
If you can get a large base ship a little bit past halfway, like if you can get a Dengar who's stressed a little bit more than halfway past the middle of the board and ion him with a Connor net and ion bomb, you're pretty much able to walk him off the board.
Right. Now, the other slot there for the ion bomb would be a seismic charge, both coming in at 2 points. The charge does 2 damage, which if you're hitting an ace ship, you would probably rather do the extra damage.
Well, it does 2 damage because of Sabine.
Right. Whereas the ion bomb's just going to do 1 damage. But you get the ion effect.
Right. And it's kind of the same thing with the debate of Connernet versus Cluster Mines. And really, in my opinion, it comes down to this. There's less swarm lists. So seismic, you're really only gaining 1 damage. In general, you're probably only going to hit 1 ship with a seismic charge. So you're trading 1 damage for the ability to control an entire zone or make someone 1 forward next turn.
Right. The value of getting an ion on a big base is more than getting 2 damage on a small
base. Right. Or even against Jamie, you saw the value of just a 1 forward on small base ships. And in the same debate with Connernet, yes, it's only 2 damage, but so I tried out the clusters, and statistically, you're only going to get 2 mines to hit 1 guy. Like, getting 3 is the dream, but let's be honest, 75% of the time that's not going to happen or happen reliably. And yes, you're guaranteed 1 damage, but typically, let's just say you roll 4 dice, you're probably going to get 2 hits and do Sabine. So you're telling me you're adding 1 damage, but you're losing, taking away actions, and you're losing ion. And I feel in general, Connernet still was superior because it allowed Miranda or Corrin to then get in position and set up a homing missile or set up a double tap. And it just, the control aspect was more value in my opinion. And it made people fly differently because you can't fly the same way with ion being there as you can just damage. You'll say, fine, do 3 damage. I don't care. I'm still going to fly how I want to fly.
There's also the fact that I really like the reach of the Connernet. Like that, the end of that template goes pretty far.
Yes, it does.
Whereas like cluster mines, you have to get pretty close to them. Whereas you can slam past and more reliably drop that Connernet and catch somebody behind you. I think that's a lot easier to trigger.
Yes, you're able to keep Miranda much safer with a Connernet than you are a cluster mine.
And kind of the high end of pilot skill we were seeing at that meta was a PSA. That would be about as high as you'd go. And you just have so many options here, whether you get or lose initiative when you have both kinds of bombs on Miranda.
Yeah, so the having her at 8 allowed you to really often view the board state for everybody that's moving before you. But then, you know, if you really want to get good at flying a K-Wing, you fly against higher PS. I think that's what makes a K-Wing player good, because you end up learning how far you can go. I mean, I ended up learning that you can, out of range 3, you can 3-3 and drop a net right in front of an ace, and there's nothing they can do to dodge it. And when you're learning to be able to do that, suddenly when you don't have initiative and you have people that move after you, you kind of just smile and say, this just makes it easier for me.
Right. Now I know if I can get it or not. Like, I know exactly where
right.
you are.
Right. And players that play against it, it's still hard for them to visualize that because they obviously they aren't flying K-Wings most of the time. but you don't expect it. You don't expect someone who's out of range to get that far and put something in front of you that you can't even dodge.
Yeah, the automatic effect of bombs is pretty awesome. When you're able to put them in the right place, there's not much your opponent can do about it.
Yep, bombs have finally become a very real presence in X-Wing.
Thanks to you, I think, for putting them on the radar.
Me and Sable.
Yeah.
And extra munitions.
Oh, yeah. Do you know how much like extra munitions is saving my list like 12 points? It's insane.
Yeah, it's insane. The value is just crazy. The
last thing to talk about, that homing missile. How many defenders did you pop with that thing?
Three or four. It's honestly, it's such a good tool. People kept saying like, why homing? It's so expensive. Why do you need it? And in testing, you know, the issue before homing missiles was on board, people would charge a Corrin and Miranda couldn't do enough damage to make them suffer. And once we got to the homing missile and we tried it out, we were like, holy cow, Ace is running fear. Her damage potential and accuracy is extremely high. It's so good.
Yeah, to me, this is really the scariest part of the list when I look at it. Like, the fact that you can either just Alpha Strike push in there and drop a shield in order to roll a 5-dice homing missile, or if you're getting in close and I'm spending all my effort to avoid your bombs, and then you just drop a target lock on me and you're set up to drop that missile whenever you choose.
Yep.
Terrifying.
It's huge. And that's where Ion really comes into play. If you can Ion someone or make them run away from you from an ion bomb and you take that turn where you're like, you know what? I'm not going to do any damage to you. I'm just going to save my target lock for later. It changes the game.
And it's so strong against defenders right now. Like being able to force them not to spend their evade token takes away most of the defensive modification that you're getting on.
Exactly.
That
and five dice is going to get through. Even if they roll max evades, it's going to do damage.
So, in anticipation of Worlds, what were you expecting the meta to look like? Was there anything that caught you off guard? Or were you just expecting Dengaru and defenders?
I think the meta was exactly what I thought it was going to be. I do think there's a little bit more Dengaru than I thought. The only list that kind of caught me off guard that I was absolutely terrified of was the list that came from Omaha that Aaron had helped develop with the Bossk Dengar at PS9, just Alpha Strike. That,
yep, that
I did not want to see that list at all. Otherwise,
another great use of homing missiles.
Yeah, another huge use of homing missiles, exactly. Otherwise, I think the meta was exactly what we thought it was going to be. I don't think it surprised anyone, in my opinion.
So you went 5-1 on day one and were able to qualify into day two. You had just a loss, one loss on day one, a loss on day two. Do you want to tell us what were those against?
So
how did that shape
I have a lesson that was learned in that game, and I will share it with everyone because they should follow this lesson. If you have to go to the bathroom, let a judge know first and ask for extra time because it might matter, and it did in this game. So I played Charlie from the Netherlands, I want to say, and he was running 3 crack defenders. And so to sum the game up, he never rolled red dice the entire game, and I had Raya down to 2 health on the last turn because I ran out of time to kill her.
This was
a really good game. I mean, it was a really cool chess game. He pretty much ran up and down the board on the side, and I had to slowly plink away at him and kind of draw him out a little bit and trick him. It ended up coming down to a final salvo because I ran out of time because I didn't ask for extra time. And if I would have, I literally only needed one more turn. But it came down to the final salvo where he rolled 9 dice and I rolled 5. And he only rolled 4 hits, but I only rolled 3. So he won on the final salvo.
That was almost the amazing part to me because I watched that final salvo. And when he only got those 4 hits, I was like, he might, you know, Kevin might be able to do
that.
There
was a chance.
TIE defenders versus Rebel regen. No ships destroyed.
Yeah.
Kevin, how do you feel about the final salvo as a tiebreaker versus having ties in the game and that whole intentional draw?
So
nonsense?
Intentional draws were bad. I think ties in general are bad. Now that I've seen final salvo and I've seen that it really favors a lot of the lists like TIE defenders that can either fortress, as we've started to see, or just kind of play their game and say, no, you have to come to me or you will lose. I think final salvo needs to go. I really think, honestly, if there's a tie, both players should lose. And I think that's the only fair way to do it. And I know some people won't like that, but I feel like it will force people to engage. It will force fights to have to happen. And that's what the game's meant to be. I mean, there's no tie in a dogfight, in my opinion.
Right.
Yeah, and it's definitely not fun when you're playing those games, or even if it's just for the first like 40 minutes of the 75-minute round, you maybe engage once or roll one set of attack dice, and then you just keep skirting the edge of the board.
Right. And I mean, there's something to be said for positioning, because I sometimes will do that. I will position myself, and I won't shoot at my opponent for the first 30 minutes of the game. But I'm not doing that to just run away and be a jerk. I'm doing that because I'm trying to create or look for an opening that is safe, because I have to be very surgical with my list.
And you still just have two small base ships. And like you said, Moran, if she gets focused down, she can go pretty quick.
Right.
So you have to be very careful about,
like, against the triple crack defenders. I can't put one of my ships in front of even two of his, because that's just dangerous. And it will probably lose me the game just if I do that alone.
Absolutely. Yeah, because once Miranda starts taking damage, she loses a lot of her effectiveness.
Yep.
And Corrin, potentially with the crack shots, can't even survive two shots from those defenders.
Exactly.
You were able to make that top 16 cut. We had the really unfortunate top 16 pairing against another Minnesota player. He's been on the show, Jamie Kreck. What were you thinking? Because you had a little bit of time before that event, before that match. What was your mindset there?
Well, I knew it was an extremely favorable matchup for me, no matter what way initiative went. I think
Jamie did that too.
Yeah, I did smile a little bit because Jamie and I played at Worlds last year too. We played in the very last round of Swiss, and I beat him with Dash Corrin, and he was running, I think, Phantom Kenkirk. But so it was kind of like, oh, hey, I get to play you again, Jamie. But yeah, going into it, I sat there and was like, yeah, this is an extremely favorable matchup for me. I have the tools to deal with having or not having initiative. And Jamie knew, like, this was his worst matchup he could have.
Yeah.
Well, and I think to his credits, he did realize the initiative situation. He had his pilot skill 8 Karnor, and whether he chose to give you initiative or not, he was at a disadvantage in some regard. But he knew that, so he played very much with that in mind, which I think helped him at least a little bit in the start.
Yeah, I still think Jamie made the right decision by taking initiative, because if I can Connor net him, Jax is just going to die whenever I want him to.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Oh, but slamming into his defender there, that was pretty impressive.
And then Jax didn't have Arc either. That was huge.
Yeah, that really surprised me there.
Yeah, that's it's a trick of K-Wings that most people don't know about either, is if you get in trouble, if you can keep that in the back as your ace card, I'm just going to slam into you and no one's going to shoot.
No one shoots.
And then next turn, you're probably getting hit by a bomb, so that's fine.
Yep, very strong probability. Very, very strong.
So you were able to beat Jamie in the top 16 match. We moved on to your top 8 match against Ben Lee, and he was flying a list that was kind of unique, actually, for the top 16 here. He had a Fenrau, an old Turok, and a Manaroo. I guess Manaroo's not that original, but we didn't see a lot of Fenraus and old Turoks.
Yep, this was the first time I had ever actually played against a Protectorate. I had never played one or played against one, but I knew how they functioned.
How many times did you have to ask to see the dial?
I think only once, because I had, yeah, it was at the beginning of the game. I was like, can I see their dial for a second? I was like, okay, you can only go speed 3 forward, that's green. You're an interceptor.
You were immediately underwhelmed, right?
Actually, you know, so I told Ben this, and I stand by it. Before our game, if I were to run a scum list, I would run a version of what he's running. And I put my money where my mouth was. And two weeks ago at our Mankato X-Wing, I ran my version of it and I loved it. I thought their dial was fantastic. And I will say it happened where Fen took a crit and it was damaged cockpit. So just like Ben, I got PS0 Fenrau in my first like real game with Fenrau. And I just went, oh my gosh, this is karma.
And you had a real moment of empathy there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, going to that moment where Ben set up the kill box for Corrin, were you pretty scared before the dice rolled?
A little bit. And it's kind of like I told some people, I did the math in my head. And I sat there and went, okay, only one of his ships is going to shoot at me. And I had a 3 forward dialed in, so I would have just slammed into Fenrau and maybe taken a shot from ult. Otherwise, I would have just been over it. I thought about 5 forwarding and just totally disengaging so no one shoots. But I did the math and I'm like, you know what? Statistics are he probably rolls 4 hits with a focused target lock. I probably roll 1 of 8 and I lose my shields. If I'm really unlucky, I take a hull, hope it's not a crit. So I did the math and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to 2-bank in and we're going to have this joust. And my big plan, though, was to set up the missile from Miranda. But I didn't expect that I would bump with Miranda so I couldn't take a target lock, because that's what I wanted. I wanted the range 1 exchange and then a missile to kill Fen. And then I wanted to start bombing ult. So that's in my head what I planned.
And then you got way more crits than you could have asked for.
Yeah, I got a really good dice roll twice. I got 2 hits, 2 crits, and he evaded the first one. And then I did it again, and he ended up taking the 2 crits after the major explosion.
Although situationally, I thought the damaged cockpit actually helped Ben there get out of range of bombs.
Yeah, it saved him. I think as much as it was demoralizing for him, I actually think that was probably the best crit he could have pulled to save Fenn. Otherwise, Fenn's in really big trouble the next turn.
Man, major explosion. What an exciting card.
Yeah, it is.
So you were able to take that match against Ben and then move down to the top four where you played against Duncan Howard. Duncan was flying an Omega Leader along with Colonel Vessery and a Lambda-class shuttle with Palpatine. And I think this match is a good example of how brutal the matched pilot skill 8s against Miranda can be.
Yeah, this was if people want to learn how to fly a K-Wing well, watch this game when it comes out on YouTube. This is a lesson in how to fly Miranda. It's brutal. And he, you know, when he gave me initiative, and this is a situation hearkening back to Jamie, Duncan thought he was really clever giving me initiative. And when he gave it to me, I just kind of smiled and thought he made my job easier.
Yeah, looking at the opening of that game, your Miranda was able to get all the way back onto his side of the mat really before much of the positioning happened.
Yep. I think in, what, three turns, she was pretty much where he had deployed on the opposite side of the map.
And then you have Miranda and Corrin on opposite sides, and he really has to choose where to commit, and you can just kind of take it from there.
Yep, and that's pretty much how it went. I mean, my first target was Omega. I mean, Vessery is scary to a degree, but I feel like I can either deal with his damage or arc dodge him pretty reliably. I just wanted to get rid of Omega so that I didn't have to deal with taking damage all the time. But yeah, that was a good situation for me where I just throw Miranda behind him and he's kind of scared and not sure what to do. And then I just isolated whoever I needed to isolate and finished him off.
His Omega took two Connor nets, right?
Yeah, because she has a shield upgrade. So she took two Connor nets and then died later on.
I really like that shield upgrade actually on Omega Leader.
I think it's a really good call.
I think to play Omega Leader in the current meta, I think she needs the shield upgrade.
Oh yeah, I agree.
So you're able to beat Duncan, moving on to the final table. So my first question is not even about this game. Like, I play a lot of X-Wing. I did reasonably well at Worlds. Like, what is the feeling when you're going to play at the final table at an event like this?
Honestly, it just feels like you're going to play another X-Wing game. Like, it still didn't hit me until, like, a week went by that I basically could have been the world champion. It just feels like, all right, I'm going to play another game, and people are going to film it, and there's just a lot of people watching. But it felt exactly the same as every other game.
Except you get to play with fancy range rulers and shiny gold dice.
The gold dice, that was awesome. I'm so happy about the gold dice.
So looking at this matchup against Nantorf, Nan was flying a Dengar Manaroo build here. Who do you think has the advantage in this match in general? Like, if you were to see this list on the table, would you feel like your list has a pretty strong pairing against it?
Yes, I actually think my list has a very strong pairing against it, mainly because he does not have a torpedo. And right away when I asked him, I was like, so you don't have a torpedo on Dengar? And he said no, and I just started to smile because that's the one thing I'm really afraid of is a torpedo. Because you can kind of dictate range a little bit against Dengar, but you can't really stop him when he wants to stay at range 2 to 3 and just take a target lock when he's ready. And then usually just rip all your shields off either one of your ships, and there's not a whole lot you can do about it. So I actually thought my matchup was pretty favorable. I mean, his Dengar was pretty light because he had a lot of points into Manaroo. And I'm not really afraid of Manaroo for my list. So it was like, okay, this is an easier version of Dengar. I have a good matchup.
Yeah, because that Manaroo is a lot less terrifying with R5 P8 when you've got the ability to regen shields on either of your ships. You're not so scared of that ability late game.
Right. And as soon as I saw that he had regen and the pain bot on Manaroo, I just immediately was like, okay, she's not my primary target. Dengar is.
So what do you feel were the key moments or a key moment that kind of shifted the game in Nan's favor?
Turn one. So I've never started a game dropping a Connor net until that game, but I knew it would catch him off guard. I didn't think he would get a shot turn one, and I thought I positioned the Connor net so it would deny the lane, but I was barely off. So turn one, and then turn three, I think, when I brought Corn around, I had the decision to either go slow and keep him in the corner or go really fast. But because I played Fawn before in Swiss and Fawn just beelined it for Miranda, and I figured, okay, he took two shields off Miranda, he's going to chase Miranda. So I thought he was going to pursue Miranda. So I brought Corn around really fast and he chose not to. That was another kind of key moment. And then the turn that Corn died, So I sat in my head and was like, okay, you know, he's going to turn left. He's not going straight. He's not going right. I can one forward and block his hard turns and his twos, or I can try to create distance and just do a two bank. And statistically I token up, and that's probably my best bet. And it was kind of a coin flip. Do you do the one forward? Because what I was concerned about was him doing a three bank. And then I can't block that no matter what move I take. And then I'm sitting range one and I'm in a bad position. And I figured, okay, if I were the Dengar player, if I do a sloop, I take the rock damage now, potentially, and there's no move I can take where I don't hit the rock next turn. Do I really want to take potentially two shields off of Dengar when I don't have to? So I overthought it, apparently. But that was my thought. Those were the three turns that were just significant.
Yeah, and then after losing Corrin, Miranda was pretty hard pressed to play catch up.
There was almost nothing I could do. And what's sad is, like, on the last turn, it looks like I just had a brain fart. But so the last turn, I'm like, okay, I'm going to two hard, and I'm going to slam, and I'm going to block him and take a target lock. That's great. But once I did my two hard, for some reason, I just paused. And you could see this on camera. You could see me pause, and I'm like, oh, the last time I thought I called his move, he did a two sloop. He could sloop right now so that I can't ion him off the board. Crap. I'm just going to stay where I am. And I just should have slammed like I planned to, but whatever. And at that point, like, the game was over. Unless he fed a potential ion of Dengar off the board, there was almost no way I could win the game.
Well, a really strong showing. I mean, clearly you could have just as easily been the champion. I think you're of that caliber, absolutely. And the way you play, I've seen you play so many times now, both at Worlds and beforehand, and you're definitely one of the best X-Wing players I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, second best player in the world right now.
Yep, it feels good. Feels good. And one of the, I can say, I think at Worlds I was the only person running that list, so that felt good too.
Yeah, I think that's an accomplishment too. I mean, Dengaru, Nanda's a great player, but we were expecting to see a lot of Dengaru really up near the top. Nobody, I think, was expecting to see your list. So that's an accomplishment.
Yeah, when his reaction before we started playing was really funny. He was like, Rebels? What? Rebels on the final table? No way.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were saying that. And now a lot of those people are probably playing your list in regionals.
So here's a question. Let's go alternate history, okay? You get to this final table. You beat Nand. Suddenly you're the world champion. You now have this wonderful and also burdensome obligation. What kind of X-Wing card would you design? What kind of mechanic would you include in the game?
Or is there a specific character that you wanted to put into a card to add to the game?
Well, I told everyone I was going to make Obi-Wan because I wanted Obi-Wan to be in the game. There was no reason Obi-Wan wasn't in the game. So my plan was to make Obi-Wan, or it was going to be to fix the X-Wing. And that's why I wore a T-65 shirt, because I wanted to fix the X-Wing.
Do you have any ideas like on fixing the X-Wing? Is there anything that jumps into your mind?
It's really tough. I want S-Foils to be in the game. I want the fact that X-Wings were the most heavily modified ship in the game, or in the galaxy. As a fighter, they were the most heavily modified ship. And I wanted that to be in the game as well. But I didn't have a great solution yet. I didn't have a great one for Obi-Wan either, but I knew those were the two things that I wanted to fix or bring into
the game. So you were looking more theming and less specific game mechanics in your mind right now.
Yeah. To me, it was more of a thematic thing, yes. I think mechanically, I didn't have a genius idea that I wanted to bring to the game yet.
Well, there's always next May.
Yeah, there is. Yep.
So moving forward, for players like me who were very impressed with your list and wanted to pick it up and try it at this regional season, what advice would you give them?
This sounds super, super corny, but it's the right answer.
Believe in yourself. No, that's
believe in yourself. Yep. I guess that's one thing. I mean, everybody told me not to run that list and I still ran it. I would say it's these two things: patience and practice, because both of those ships, you have to have a lot of patience and you have to have a lot of practice, or you'll make a mistake that you didn't know. And every game with that list is a lesson. Like, I still am learning how to play that list because it's such a high variance possibility that you learn, like, oh, I needed to not do that. So in future situations, I need to remember those lessons.
I would echo that. I've played it a decent amount now, and I usually know what the right move is, and it's the patient one. and I just never take it and then regret it immediately the next turn. Like,
yep.
Why did I put Corrin in that terrible position? Well,
and there's nuances to that list that people don't think about. So one of the things I really try to incorporate into my game, which I use sometimes to catch people off guard, is poker elements. I bluff. Like my game against Duncan, I shot at the shuttle and I didn't double tap. So I think he immediately thought that meant Corrin was going to dive in and try to hit the shuttle. But I broke off and I went for Omega. And I think that caught him by surprise. And in a game in Swiss, a guy had me in a kill box with Corrin, and he had blocked Corrin the turn before and took two shields off. So he set up a kill box for me to take a green move into. And I just five forwarded past his entire list. And he was like, oh, crap. And those are types of things that you can bluff. Like, I also, you'll catch me sometimes at the table. I will be eyeing on the table a move that I'm not going to do to make you think.
Oh, I do that too.
Yeah. Like, that's fun. And it's great. And to me, that's a whole new part of X-Wing that most people don't play. And that's really interesting to me, is if you can bring bluff mechanics into the game. I mean, some people will hate it, but it's genius.
Right. The other side to that is, if there's like a complicated move I want to eye, I like can't. I'm just like, well, we'll just see what happens. I can't sit there and look at it because that'll give it away.
And that's really tough, as you're seeing with Miranda. Like, you have to be able to visualize the slam bombs. It's really hard sometimes.
Right. And when you mess it up, you execute maneuver, you're like, oh, that took me a little farther than I thought I was going to. It's like,
Yep, you'll definitely have those moments.
And I think that's a skill you exemplify, Kevin, being able to visualize these movements. Because I think, like, fundamentally, lists aside, ships aside, what really separates the top-tier X-Wing players is that when they set that dial, when they plan their maneuvers, they know exactly where their ships are going to end up.
Yep.
Like, they do that with absolute confidence. And I think that's something you clearly can do right up there with all the other great top X-Wing players.
Yep. When I first started playing the game, learning how to fly Biggs and Garvin in a formation, all I did was I sat at my counter and I would just move my ships. And I would eventually just be like, okay, I have to visualize what a 2-bank looks like, what a 3-bank looks like, and where I'm at. And I spent hours practicing that when I first started playing the game.
So Worlds is over. 2016 Worlds is over. We're in the midst of another regional season, and we're approaching yet another Worlds coming up in May. We're on the verge of Wave 10 releasing. At the time we're recording now, the Rogue One movie comes out tomorrow. We're expecting Rogue One ships to come out, and then the rest of Wave 10, hopefully soon after that. Is there anything, Kevin, from Wave 10, whether it's ships or upgrade cards, that you're really excited about? Any new mechanics you're interested in trying out?
I'm excited for Jyn. I think Jyn is interesting on a lot of different ships. We're going to see a rise in Hotshot Copilot, I think. And I think Jyn's going to be a really good answer to that. I think Jyn is really cool because she can play a lot of different roles on different ships. For example, the Ghost. She's really interesting on the Ghost. I think she's really interesting on the Falcon. And maybe we'll see some weird Hawk play or something. But I think Jyn is the card I am the most excited for. And that interests me the most as far as list building. Because it's an interesting card.
Would you ever play the Rebel version of Palp Aces with Jyn on a U-Wing and then two Rebel Aces?
I just listened to the episode this morning when you had talked about that. I didn't mind that list. If you could figure out a way to get that PS3 guy in there so he can trigger on a block, I think that's really good. I mean, I don't know if you can fit it, but I don't think that's bad.
Yeah, I think it's a good starting point. Jyn is like exciting enough that there might be something there.
Well, there's so many new mechanics and other things being introduced in Wave 10 that I think it's going to shake up the metagame in some form.
Yep. So the pilot I'm most excited for is Ahsoka, because I think you can do some pretty cool stuff in a 3-ship Rebel list with Ahsoka.
Don't you wish she was like on an A-Wing or something though?
Yeah, I do. I wish she was on an A-Wing.
That would have been awesome.
We can dream.
Yep.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you coming on the show. And a huge congratulations to you, man. Making the final table at Worlds is no small feat.
You are now our most decorated guest we've had on the show.
Yep. Finally, I get to say I'm the best player of the Twin Cities.
That's right. Updated.
But Jamie's still been on the show more times. So.
Yeah, but I'm no Jamie, though, because he's been on more.
We'll work on that. Before we leave, your list. A lot of people playing it. What do you want your list referred to? Is it the Kevin special?
So I get to credit you, Carson, on this one for your idea. And I think it's the best list idea that I had heard. And I like the name. We're going to call it Top Gun.
Okay.
Top Gun. Awesome. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, guys.
All right, so that was our interview with Kevin. Another thank you to Kevin. It was really nice of him to take the time to be on the show.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go through and listen to this episode again, I think. There's just a lot to unpack there. A lot of great tidbits of knowledge.
Yeah, he's a really good X-Wing player. So a quick Patreon update for all our Radio TCX patrons. It's time for us to announce the January 2017 raffle prizes for our patrons.
We're going to have a TIE Striker expansion pack.
Yeah, in honor of Rogue One coming out, we figured it would be wise to send out one of those ships. So even if you already buy one, you could always use a second, right? Those pilot scale one pilots come in pretty cheap. And we're also giving away an Omega Ace alt art card. I believe these were at the North American Championships as one of the possible promos, and then also at the Hangar Bay side event at Worlds 2016.
Yeah, this is the extended art of a really sweet picture of the TIE Fighter attacking in snow.
Yeah, so those are our prizes. If you'd like to be eligible for the raffle, you can go to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a patron at any level. The $1 level gets you one raffle ticket, and the $2, $3, and $4 levels get you three raffle tickets.
We just want to say a big thank you to everyone who has already become a supporter of the show. It really means a lot.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you'd like to stay up to date with the show and X-Wing news in general, please go to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page.
Or you can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, please consider going onto iTunes and leaving a 5-star review. These reviews really mean a lot to us in broadening the reach of the show. And if you could just leave a comment with that review telling people what you like about the show, it would be really appreciated.
If you want to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a supporter today.
This will be our last episode for 2016. It's been quite a year. A huge thank you again, guys, to all you listeners, all you Patreon patrons. We really appreciate the support of the show. It's the reason we want to keep doing this week after week.
We may release a bonus episode to be decided that will just show up mysteriously.
Again, guys, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next year.